Fellow citizens, it has come to the attention of my benevolent administration that the US presidential elections are taking place. Regardless of whoever is sitting in the Oval Office, they will be completely under my control. The trouser suits that Kamala Harris is so fond of are actually robotic exoskeletons. Once inside, she will be controlled by one of my underlings in order to do my bidding. Donald Trump, his mane of thick hair, is all his own. He paid for every strand of it. He's capable of projecting auto-hypnotic commands into his head and is easily controlled. Thus, I hold dominion over the population. Today, the United States. Tomorrow, the world. Here endeth my address.
Well, I'm slightly scared.
He's got my vote.
Welcome, 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 dear listeners, one and all, to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcasts. I'm Crumbly.
I'm Adam.
I'm Jean.
And I, yes, I am
very, very ill.
Those aren't special effects.
Those aren't, no.
And we are one presenter short.
So I apologise.
She's not dead.
Yes, I hope she's not dead. Don't be dead.
No, it sounds like you're about to expire.
I apologise now to all you listeners or listener out there. I have dragged myself from the sick bed to be here, and with any luck, will infect everyone else in the room.
Thanks.
Wouldn't be the first time this happened.
I dodged a bullet that time.
We've got several mice in our office, but he was having a little run round today, so he was looking up all the symptoms of things you can get with mice, and one of them is flu-like symptoms that lead to death.
Oh. Why do you have mice running around your office?
Because we have an exceedingly old building.
Oh.
And they're currently doing a lot of works on it, so it's wound them all up and all the nests have got disturbed.
Oh.
So they're out having a little forage around our kitchen. Champion.
Well, it makes a change from raccoons wandering all around all over the Isle of Wight. So.
Yeah.
They've gone native.
Oh, yes. No, alas and alack, they've all been sort of captured.
Oh, they caught them all.
Yeah.
No more trash panda.
No. Anyway, without further ado, presidential broadcast besides... It's the news with El Presidente.
Woo-hoo!
Woot woot.
Doctor Who.
Oh yeah.
Ooh. More stories have disappeared from the iPlayer.
Oh. No.
Are we finished?
Yes.
1 year ago, the Hooniverse was officially born.
Yay.
And part of that was the listing of the entirety of Classic Who on the BBC iPlayer, with a notable exception of the first story. Sadly, the son of the deceased writer refused to do a deal to allow that story to put on the streaming service. Now, two more stories are vanishing from the service, presumably due to a one-year deal expiring. Both are Tom Baker stories and are the only two Doctor Who TV stories written by Robert Banks Stewart, namely Terror of the Zygons and The Seeds of Doom. Both very good stories. Stewart died back in 2016, so presumably his estate did the deal a year ago, and for some reason that has not or cannot be renegotiated at this time. Hopefully talks are taking place. As ever, owning the physical media version of these stories will mean you can continue to enjoy these stories for years to come. Talking of which, the Hugh Edwards infected story, David Tennant's Fear Her, still remains missing quite some months after it was taken down for the Edwards voiceover to be replaced.
Yes, we're missing four stories at the moment.
It is interesting how many people were thinking of getting rid of their collections when it started streaming.
Yeah.
And apparently the sales of physical DVDs are going up because there's a whole generation that want to go and watch all those things they did when they were a teenager. And they aren't there anymore.
Yeah. Yes.
And they realise why their old fogey parents have all these DVDs.
I mean, anything that's shown on Netflix that's taken off because it's been cancelled, you can't watch those anymore.
No.
Prime example also is Star Trek Prodigy.
Yeah. To my mind...
Well, the first season's out on... DVD and Blu-ray.
DVD and Blu-ray, not...
If there's a film or a TV series... particularly TV series, you really, really like, and you know you're going to go back to watch again at some point and rewatch. Buy it on DVD.
Yes.
We have said this before.
Yeah.
Even if it's secondhand from CX or whatever the equivalent is in your country.
Yeah, Dorich is not a new story, but I see Disney are putting out some more 4Ks of their Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
Mandalorian Season 3 and...
Come on, you can do it.
I can't.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Squeeze that brain cell.
They're slowly drip feeding out 4Ks of their Disney Plus TV series.
What about Ahsoka? And,
Ahsoka, yeah. I think it was Ahsoka.
What about Obi-Wan?
That's already out.
All right.
I already got that. Yeah.
Good Omens, third season replaced by a TV movie. There have been some serious concerns about the upcoming third and final season of Amazon's Good Omens series. We now know that a third season will not be happening, but instead we can expect the story to become a 90-minute TV movie. The series continues the story of the angel Azrael, played by Michael Sheen, and the demon Crowley, played by David Tennant, as originally depicted in the book of the same name by Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. Gaiman was spearheading the series, with Pratchett having died about 9 years ago, but recent sexual assault allegations made his involvement in the final season untenable.
Blimey.
He will no longer have any active role in the final film and will not be listed as the executive producer. The paused production is expected to restart early in 2025, likely for a 2026 release. How this affects Gaiman's other projects, such as Netflix's second season of Sandman and Amazon's I'm going to mangle this, I do apologise. Anansi Boys, or Disney's The Graveyard Book, is currently very unclear.
Blimey.
He's always said there will be a third series of Good Omens in one form or another.
Yes.
If Amazon didn't take up the offer, he would have written the book.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I hate to say it's whether we'd find a publisher at the moment.
At the moment,
that's it. Indeed.
Well, if he's persona non grata at the moment.
It's going to be made.
Yeah.
It's not very clear who's writing it. I think he did write at least the final episode, apparently.
Yeah, I think certainly the he would have written the outline.
Yeah.
And maybe a few of the scripts.
So his name may be on there in some regard, but he won't be part of the actual production.
We understand he did step away from the project to make sure that it would get produced.
Yeah.
I'm unwilling to make a declaration at this point until everything's sorted.
Exactly. Allegations, you just don't know, do you?
Yeah.
There have been multiple allegations, which doesn't help his case. But you just don't know. You weren't there.
No.
It's not gone before a judge and a jury. So who knows?
All very disturbing.
Yeah.
Hey, Doctor Who, Stuff of Legends, live-ish recording.
Ah, yes.
One of the more successful efforts of recent months for the audio-mongers at Big Finish were the live recordings of the Paul McGann audio play Stuff of Legends.
Which were very, very good and very amusing.
Which we were at.
Whilst there is a studio recording of the story already available, you can now double dip and buy the story again, this time a version recorded live at Cadogan Hall a couple of months ago. Director Barnaby Edwards said of this new version, "Directing a Doctor Who audio adventure is always fun, but it's done without any feedback from the listener. Not so the Stuff of Legend Live, where the reactions of the audience dictated the pace and delivery of each performance. The live recording is a beast of a very different colour from the studio version. New cast members, new lines, new action, New live sound effects, new feel. I can't wait for people to buy it. What they haven't said is this taking sections from different performances or just one. If there has been any fiddling with the live effects in post-production, or what, if any, special features will be added. We do know it will be released sometime next month and will cost £16 on CD or £13 for download only.
Now, sorry, I was going to say, at the recording, we did actually have a Foley artist on stage doing the boots on the gravel and that kind of stuff for the special effects.
Now, yes. While I've said certainly where DVDs are transferred to Blu-rays, if I've already got it on the DVD, then I probably won't buy the Blu-ray or the upgraded version. But because these are such two different beasts, I think I will... I know the story, but the pace of it, the entertainment of it was different.
I have pre-ordered it.
We were fortunate to look at it from different angles. So I listened to the studio version and you guys saw the live recording at Okanogan Hall.
Yeah, it is a very different beast from... The studio version is a very different beast from the live version, such as... For a case in point, one of the characters gets inside the TARDIS for the first time and mutters the immortal lines of "It's bigger than..." And the round of rapturous applause she got when she said that. So.
It's like watching a stage play
or
a recording of a comedy show. If you listen to a comedy show on the radio that's got a live audience, you can tell the difference between the live recording and the recording where they dubbed over laughter, even just in the tempo of the actual artist. So it will be, it will have a totally different feel. Yeah.
It's something that I'm going to invest in.
Definitely. Well, any addendums?
I have none. I've been sick. Just to reassure.
Rub it in.
Yeah. And two, I'm on holiday, so I don't look...
Don't look at the internet for me on holiday.
No, God, no.
That's how you do when you work.
actually. So I'm afraid I have no addendums. Oh. I am addendum-less.
A Keith without an addendum.
It's like Adam without a thick lip. He's pulling a face. He's not saying anything. Let it all wave in the wind.
That's an image I ain't getting out of my head.
There is one thing I do like about this cold that I've got.
Right.
I have got a Muttley laugh.
Wheezing.
Yeah, I quite like when I get a cold and I go for the Fenella Fielding stage.
Hello. Sorry. Do you mind if I smoke?
Yes. Hello. Committee services.
And thus endeth the news.
So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we've had some time on our hands, so we went to the cinema.
We did.
Watch something on the big screen. Paid money. and we'll get back to that in a later.
Oh.
What did we watch?
We watched Joker, Follet ou Dou, which I've probably just massacred because I don't do French.
I don't think so.
Don't do French.
Don't do French. Well, she does do French. With a brick. Pause for music.
Some people call me the Space Cowboy.
Not that music.
All right.
It's not entirely clear why it has been given a French title. Nothing else about the film which is French.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Mange tout, Rodney. Mange tout.
Do you know? Please tell us.
Well, folie à deux means madness of two.
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce it then?
Folie à deux.
Thank you. What he said.
It's a bit doo-doo-ish, isn't it?
Right. This is essentially the sequel to the Batman-less Joker from 2019.
Yeah. Which I thought was exceedingly good.
It was.
Does she still have Joaquin Phoenix in it?
Yes.
It
does, yeah. It's still contained Arthur Fleck. Arthur Fleck. I enjoyed the first film with reservations.
Okay.
Why reservations?
Arthur Fleck. The Joker is a nondescript, non-named. Mm. There's a wonderful line from The Killing Joke. If I have to have a pass, I want it to be multiple choice.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You don't know who or what the Joker is.
This film does address that.
Mm.
That's going right to the end. So it's not going there just yet.
So it takes place after the madness, I say, of the first film, and it shows Arthur's time in prison running up to his trial.
It's a prison slash courtroom drama.
Sanatorium, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah.
More than
it is Arkham Asylum, but it's... Yeah. Because when they break out, you see the words Arkham Asylum. Yes.
He's medicated up to the eyeballs, taking antipsychotics, and being a good little boy.
Yes. Being very reserved, very quiet.
Very unlike Joker.
Yes. Yeah.
And then one day whilst out being walked down the corridors, he sees a fair maiden.
Aye.
Who is attending her singing classes.
Oh.
The warden basically gets him into the singing classes, and this is... Lee, what does she call
it? Lee Quinzel.
Lee Quinzel.
Her full name is Harley Quinzel.
Yes. Yeah.
She goes by Lee.
She goes by
Lee. And they fall in love.
Oh. Well.
It's a musical, but it isn't a musical.
Yeah. A lot of musical numbers in there, which are imagined, for the most part, by mostly Arthur, I think.
Yeah. Is it by going by the first film, we established that Arthur is an unreliable witness.
Very much so.
And it's done mostly from his point of view.
I was going to say, let's start at the very beginning.
Okay.
Right. I liked the way
dinosaurs
it started.
And the oil.
Yeah. I liked the way it started with the cartoon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And,
that was good.
And I loved the references between Joker and his shadow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that played in very well to the schizophrenia of the character or the split personality.
But yeah, was he a split personality? Was he not?
And that's it.
That is one of the... Sorry, but that's one of the major points of the court case.
Yes, absolutely.
Is he mad? Is he sane?
is he psychotic?
Yeah.
I thought that was quite clever as well. And I thought Lady Gaga did very well as Harlequin.
Yeah.
I've never seen her acting, although... Yeah. I'm not sure it's going to do her singing career any famous. Because there's only one song in it where she sings properly. The rest of it's all a bit
There's only
does
one...
Does she have a singing career?
There is only one original song in there, which is written by her.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's very heavily Arthur's... Arthur...
Arthur will do.
The Joker's mother...
He's not the Joker, he's just Joker.
Sorry, Joker's mother was very much of that age where she would have watched those old 50s, 60s, 70s movies.
Yeah.
And most of the music and the ideas around his fantasy, the style of them, are of that genre. The movies they watch in it are very kind of like the 1950s... Just post-war movies. The music is as well.
It's what you get from any standard either war movie, prison movie, or even future sci-fi movie. They're watching films that have run out of copyright, so the company that is making the film doesn't have to pay.
Yeah.
So,
but it does fit in with the age of his mother and that kind of stuff.
It fits in. It fits in.
I'm sure they're all owned by Warner Brothers, whatever they...
Yeah.
They were, yeah.
But it's, as I say, they're all... What you would call old films, because it's at the virtually out of copyright.
Old Hollywood musicals.
Yeah.
And the whole premise is basically Arthur's solicitor is trying to prove that he's a fruitcake so that she can get him off of the murder on the basis of a split personality, etc.
Diminished responsibility.
You've got Two-Face, although he isn't Two-Face.
No, Harvey Dent.
Arthur Dent.
Arthur Dent.
Harvey.
Harvey Dent.
I wasn't wearing a dressing gown.
I did see him at one point.
You got Harvey Dent as the prosecutor who's going for the death penalty, and then you've got this kind of like sort of like love story-ish thing in between.
Does he ever get the hang of Thursdays?
No. And
definitely not.
The premise sounds good, and the dealing with psychosis and psychology and all that kind of stuff, and who he is and what he is, and there's slight overtones of the bagger thing at the moment as well with the brand of cult. But this is about an hour and a half, 2 hours of my life I'm never getting back.
Ooh.
Yeah. I found it very disappointing too. For me, the greatest thing about the first film is you came away not sure what was real and what wasn't.
Yeah.
Potentially all of it was fantasy.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And particularly that stuff at the end where he was saved by his people is all about him wanting to be seen by society.
Yeah.
Mm. Only when he took on that persona of Joker did he have any influence on the world. And then in this one, there's talk of there being a TV special about him. But you don't really see him interact with the world at all. It's like he's cut off.
The only time you actually see him, he's still cut off, but it's when the occasional moments that he's escaped, you've got the mob outside. Yeah. There's no direct interaction.
Mm. But the worst bit of it is, it plants a flag in the ground as to what was real in the first and what wasn't.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. I suppose it's inevitable when if you go to a sequel, you have to say, this happened, this didn't. There was implication maybe he killed his neighbour, but she's alive and well, so clearly not. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the last one, did he kill the
psychiatrist?
Yeah. The numbers of killings he did suggest not.
Yeah.
Because he killed 5 people on record, 6 in reality, and she's not part of that number. So, and in this one, it's very clear what is fantasy and what's real. When he's there dancing in Joker makeup in his fantasy, that's clearly in his mind.
The musical numbers are all
but
clearly,
the rest of it seems to be very real.
So, and it sounds to me like it's very ambiguous in some respects, as you keep saying, sort of, does the action take place in real life or solely in his head?
It's easier to tell with this one.
This one is very clear.
It's very clear.
It's very, very definitely. My problems with it is the first one, yes, it possibly could have been the Joker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You had the beginnings of a story where he's not quite there yet. He's not the complete psychotic.
Yeah.
But you could see that direction he could go.
It's a great character arc. Mm.
This one, it is definitely not the Joker.
Yeah.
He's one supremely sad sack psychotic. None of the advanced sanity of the Joker.
Yeah.
He is not completely off his rocker or completely terrifyingly sane, which is the two extremes of the Joker get.
Even when he comes off the medication, because you can accept for the first part of the story, he's taking the medication, and so they've totally suppressed the Joker. He's away with the fairies. But when he starts coming off the medication, there's elements of the Joker character come through. But as you say, it's not...
No, he's...
The extreme of the Joker.
It comes across as a very sad, psychotic person who...
Playing a role.
Who can't do anything.
Mm. Yeah.
He has no plans or no emphasis of himself by himself. He is not the driving force.
No, it's accidental.
Yeah.
And where he is.
Yeah.
Whilst I get the musical element of it, and that's predominantly in his mind, as well, one or two bits which were in the real world, because they were going to a music therapy class and that kind of stuff. But the ones that were most definitely had a cartoony feel to them as well. I am not adverse to a musical. I am not adverse to singing randomly in the middle of serious films. It got right on my wick after a while. Because, God bless their little cotton socks, but they were either deliberately not singing very well.
Oh, no.
I mean, it wasn't... I
thought the singing was fine, but...
It wasn't that brilliant, the singing, but... I don't know, it started to grate. I don't know if it was deliberately done like that or not.
By the way you're describing Folie à Deux, it sounds like Arkham Asylum meets Mamma Mia.
To a certain extent, but...
Pierce Brosnan sung better in Mamma Mia.
Well, I stand corrected.
I don't know about the quality of singing, but the singing didn't really move anything forward.
No.
Yeah.
It was set pieces.
No more interruptions than anything else.
And it didn't even set... Not only did it not move the story forward, it didn't really portray that much of what was going on his psychology. It did initially, but it became so frequent through the story, it lost the novelty of, this is his mind kind of
stuff. Quite samey, too, the songs. Mm. They didn't seem to...
I had... no problem with the singing, because that sort of fitted in with what I'd seen before. But I do I do agree with you on certain aspects of that. Also, again, my main complaint is the fact that it's not the Joker. Certainly the televised versions and a couple of the books. The Joker needs the Batman.
Mm.
There's a line from Dark Knight, I'm not going to kill you, you complete me. There's a wonderful scene from The Return of the Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Batman has given up, he's hung his mantle, and he's now Bruce Wayne and doing something else. And the Joker himself has just shut down, he's gone psychotic. Not psychotic, he's gone...
Catatonic.
Catatonic, shut in. And there is this wonderful montage of panels where the Batman returns. For whatever reason, he puts his cape back on and starts fighting crime. And you have this wonderful couple of panels where you have this grey-haired, not wizened, but wizened figure sort of sitting in a mental asylum somewhere going, "Bah, bah, bah, Batman, darling." And the Joker is back.
He's reborn, yeah. Yes.
I think in this one, you had the cult of the Joker.
Yeah. But
that was in the first film too.
Yeah, no, but it was really established this one. And they were fighting against the system. But there was no system to fight against.
And
I think that's where the parody comes from, a certain political bias at
although
the moment.
We had the cult of the Joker, it had no real connection to the Joker, despite the fact that they were dressed in clown masks.
Yeah.
That was the only connection. It could have been the cult of Batman, the cult of Mudface, the cult of Two-Face. Yeah. It didn't have any direct connection to it.
But more than that, in the first film, Arthur Fleck had such a great arc.
Yeah.
Going from nobody to finding himself as Joker, becoming somebody that people knew. In this one,
it's almost
he had
reverse.
No arc, really. No. Nothing happened to him, apart from at the end when he seemed to renounce Joker because he felt bad about his old friend, Puddles. Was it? Is that the reason why he suddenly? I think so. It's not very clear. That was it. Actually, the more interesting character would have been Lee.
Yeah.
Because she definitely did have an arc. She came in idolising this vision of Joker, and then she started to see who he really was, and then turned her back on him. But that would have centering on her would have been probably a more interesting film.
But I've heard Fake Keith's feedback, and I agree with Fake Keith's feedback. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do it here because I don't want to steal her thunder.
Oh, right,
got a bit for her. But I agree exactly with what she says about the Harley character.
Yeah, it's probably very different to Harley we know generally. The point is, she had an arc of some kind. Her character did change. And if we'd seen it from her point of view and we only visited Joker, then that might have been a more interesting film, I think.
I mean, one of the things in this is everyone wanted a piece of him. You know, they wanted him to sign books because they'd be valuable when he's dead and the interviews. And she was as much a parasite as the rest of society in that respect, in that she befriended him. She got herself in there. She befriended him, etc., because she was almost trying to ride on his coattails. And then when she found out there was no coattails to ride on, she dumped him.
Yeah.
All of this, I have to say, the acting by both Lady Gaga by Joaquin Phoenix is excellent. This doesn't belie their portrayal of both of the characters.
The acting is superb with the material they've got. The problem is the material they've got. One of the videos on YouTube, I find this fascinating, is it cost $200 million.
Crazy.
Where is that? It's not on the screen. You don't see that.
No. Most of that money went to the stars and the director, because they didn't want to do a second one.
Todd Phillips, the director,
didn't want to do a sequel. Joaquin Phoenix did not want to do a sequel. They had to be paid a lot of money to do it.
It's certainly not on the screen. It is a very drab, rainy, tiny little shot.
Now, spoiler music for anyone that hasn't watched this.
Spoiler music.
Don't listen to this next bit. I thought the most interesting point of it was the birth of the Joker at the end.
Yes. Which is something apparently they wanted to do at the end of the first one, but they were persuaded not to.
Yeah.
Where you had his inmate who...
may not have been there. You could put the argument, and if it's correct, it's the only interesting bit in the whole film, is the... Spoiler music. The person who stabs him is his psyche. He's not actually there.
Maybe.
We were informed that it's a split personality, so that is his perceiving of the other side of the personality. That is winning him over.
But that character, whose name I can't remember, has been spoken to and referenced by the guards and the other inmates and that kind
of stuff. I didn't recognise him. It wasn't the same guy as his assistant, the guy who... It's a completely different...
You see him at least once in the earlier scene where he gives a very creepy Joker-like smile.
And it was the laugh as well at the end once he stabbed him. It was much more of a Joker laugh.
You see him cut his cheek. So the implication is that he's the Joker from the Nolan trilogy.
when I think that plays nicely into the idea of the Joker in the comic has no fixed identity. He's not, he's not a named character. So it kind of like builds into this whole thing of Joker becoming the Joker is an identity that people have worn. So, you know, it's not necessarily always the same Joker.
They did a similar thing in Gotham.
Yeah, there's at least three in Gotham.
But, yeah, it's a long film for like 5 minutes of, oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
It's just a little cap to say that Arthur Fleck is not the Joker. He's just Joker, and then the Joker is inspired by Joker.
But even so, at the end of it, it's a very disappointing film.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I kind of wish they hadn't done it.
Yeah, I do too, really. It certainly hasn't paid them off. It's done terribly.
This is another thing. The first one, Joker got quite a few Oscar nominations. And to a certain extent, I feel the writing, directing, and song was done for the next Oscar season.
No, probably.
And it just, you know, it's written with an intent, so it just missed it.
Did the same person who wrote the first one write this one?
Yeah. Scott Silver and Todd Phillips, who also directed it, wrote Folie à Deux.
Did they write the first one?
Yeah, it's same writers.
Yeah. I did like the fact that Harvey Dent was in it. Even if he isn't Two-Face, or he may become, we don't know, because the Batman may never actually exist.
Well, I think Bruce Banner and Bruce Wayne was seen in the first one, but he was only a very small boy in the first one. Mm-hmm. It's certainly set or has links with the Batman-verse, the Gotham-verse, but...
Yeah,
thanks. I'm thinking this is one even Dave wouldn't watch.
I would say watch it by all means. By all means, watch it. But wait till it comes out on Freeview or, you know, it's on the channels. Don't pay money to watch this.
Probably not. Mm. Yeah. I mean, some people will like it.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Apparently, it is very Marmite. Mm. Either you love it or you hate it. But
if you are studying psychology, it's a very interesting film.
But less so by far than the first one.
Oh, yeah. This one almost plays more with depression than it does split personalities and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the first one was about a broken man in a broken world and what that broken world does to him.
Yeah.
This one is just a slightly boring prison and courtroom drama, really.
So this, to my mind, this is about a sad man, courtroom drama, sad man. That's it.
Yeah.
I preferred Cesar Romero's Joker.
Complete with the moustache?
Yeah, even though it's makeup's over. Yeah.
What
did Fake Keith think of this?
Well, let's find out.
Yes.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
I have never been as disappointed with a film as I was with this one. Until about three quarters of the way through, I was, okay, the disjointed feeling fits with the Joker's mental state, etc. But then we got towards the end and, oh, my God, the end made this the most pointless film I've ever seen.
Blimey.
Oh, I'm so cross about it. On the way home from the cinema, Keith and me, we just debated it rather loudly. We both had the same opinion, as he's probably already told you.
Mm-hmm. I did.
We were genuinely cross with this film. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen often. Mm. Let's go for the good points. Both Joaquin Phoenix and Lady Gaga, they did magnificently with the material they were given.
Mm. Yep.
No problems with either of them. It's just the material they were given was the issue. I was getting quite cross about the prison guards. Mm-hmm. They were stereotypical, bullying, nasty prison guards.
Yep.
But then you had that really nice scene where Joker and Harley are talking, and in the background you've got the head prison guard expressing his love of music and singing. So that was a nice three-dimensional touch. Not enough, but nice. Harley herself wasn't Harley enough. We know she's a Joker fangirl, but no, she just wasn't mad enough for me. She was more misguided than anything. It just... Mm. I love Margot What's-Her-Face's version of Harley.
Really?
The complete, excuse the term, batshit crazy version. But this version really wasn't enough. And it belittled her that she'd submitted herself to this place, essentially to spite her parents, suggesting that while she may be a little bit wacko, now she's spoilt little rich girl kind of feeling was coming across.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
And her turning on the Joker when she did, and as easily as she did, that also belittled her character.
Mm.
As for the Joker himself, he was too far gone. There wasn't enough of his insanity coming through. There wasn't enough of what made the Joker the Joker. And I suppose it'll be argued that that was the whole point. He's so far into the system that he can't be the Joker that we all know and love or know and hate.
Hmm.
But now, if you'd shown this film and we hadn't known it was a Joker film, it could have been any old run-of-the-mill people in a mental institution being mistreated film. And that was a huge disappointment. I think one thing it tells us is that without the Batman, the Joker is not strong enough, not on his own.
Mm.
Then you have the scene in the courthouse where the walls exploded. Mm. And I thought, yes, it's going to be Harley. She's going to have done her Harley thing and she's going to be there for him. And it wasn't her. It was a bunch of fans, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And he, of course, quickly turns on all of them as well. But the whole Harley is pregnant thing just made me cringe. It was almost embarrassing. And I hope to high heaven they're not planning a Son of Joker film, because I'm not sure I'd even bother going to see it. And as for the ending, I don't want to talk about the ending. It was terrible. And I think the suggestion was the guy with the knife busy carving open his own face is going to be the new Joker.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, but if that's the case, it's game over. I did not enjoy this film. It annoyed me. Karen out.
So, so there are one, two things that she reminded me of, and I'd like to point out. There are two points where he could have been the Joker. One is the prison escape, where the, you saw them climbing the...
Yes.
So they could have broken out and we could have... I thought, oh, now we're going to have proper Joker shenanigans, but no, they're instantly recaptured.
Yes.
And the explosion, where he again goes on the run.
Yeah.
And yeah, we have a moment there for him to be proper insanity Joker, criminal activity, and it just ran into a brick wall.
Even kill somebody.
In,
that's the whole thing about the first film, where he was killing people.
Yeah.
Innocent people, mostly. But this one, he didn't do anything.
Now, I do agree with Karen in that Harley Quinn is as disturbed as the Joker is.
Yeah.
And she isn't, and this is what I was saying, she was playing him.
She's a poor little rich girl.
Yeah.
Who's
just doing it to spite mummy and daddy, which is not the character.
Well, that's fine. But was she even pregnant? I'm not even sure. No, I don't even know she was.
No.
I have to say, considering she told him she was pregnant within, what, about a week of them doing the wild thing?
Wow.
I doubt it's very much.
It's a little unclear, but yeah.
But no. Oof.
Disappointing.
Yes, very.
Yep. Oh, well, never mind. We won't get a sequel.
No.
That much is sure.
Yeah, it's meant to have outdone Madam Web.
For how poorly it's done.
And
given how she cost as well.
Yeah, that set the bar pretty low.
Yeah, and that was a far cheaper film.
Yeah. Okay, tell us what you think about.
Please do. Particularly if you enjoyed it.
Apparently there are people out there who...
If you did enjoy it, tell us why we're wrong and what we're missing, what we're not getting.
Yeah.
You can send your comments to show...
at staggeringstories.net.
Interspersed in our review of the film, and then our review of an audio from Big Finish.
Ooh.
I'm having a little aside.
Yes, with my wife.
I'm having a little aside with your wife.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes, me and Karen had an aside.
Ooh.
We went to see John Barrowman.
Oh, dear.
Laid bare.
Oh, dear.
On stage.
The shy and retiring John Barrowman.
Nothing new there.
Shy and retiring John Barrowman. It's his one-person show.
And a hand.
Oh, yes, I'll go to the hand. that's basically a mixture of songs, anecdotes from out his career, and that kind of stuff. So most of it's on the stage with him.
Any puppetry of the penis?
No, no.
It's fully suited and muted.
It's him, a pianist, and his husband's there, and occasionally you see the husband's hand and arm handing him a notebook because you can put questions in. And that's the only bit of him, Scott, you see. Is his okay. Hand. He's got a blinding set of lungs on him, as we already know. And the tails, I mean, we're going back. He's got anecdotes from back in the days when he first came out and told his girlfriend he was gay. And she said, yes, I know. And, going up to George Lucas and going, CCP2R2D2 Skywalker, and running off. And it's very, very good. I'm not going to tell you them because it's still ongoing. Yeah. And there will be people that will be going to see this and I don't want to spoil it. Mm-hmm. There was Q&A sessions with him as well. In the second half, he covered basically the fallout from the Doctor Who and all the rest of it.
Okay.
And you can tell everything else he's doing unscripted, just here's the story and what have you.
Yeah.
He has it written down and he has it interspersed with a song, some lyrics of the song, and you can really tell how much it hurt him. I didn't know his agent dropped him, not just the BBC and everyone else.
Mad.
I mean, the guy was not actually accused of anything. Yep. No one put in complaints. There was no Crown Prosecution Services thing. He'd covered it in his book previously.
Yep.
And he was dropped like a stone.
Yeah.
An absolute pariah.
Yeah, it was just a few vocal members. I won't, don't even say fans, because I don't think they were. But they were vocal minority.
Yeah.
Well, the tabloids got on.
It was mainly the tabloid press.
They love to turn on the famous people, don't they?
Yeah. And he said, you know, the only people that were still were hanging on, apart from a few of the actors, was the fandom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fandom was the only bit. But it was it was interesting that in all his career, you could tell that was the bit that
it still rankles with him hardest.
Yeah. But it was a really good show. It was a thoroughly enjoyed. We laughed. Me and Cameron, between the two of us, we laughed and cried our way through the whole thing. I think the whole audience was between laughing from sort of like upset, laughing from basically what was going on, crying from upset, crying, yeah. So I don't think it's going outside of the UK at the moment. Mm-hmm. But if you are in the UK, visiting the UK, live in the UK, I would really recommend going to see it.
Mm.
Okay, there will be people go, I'm not into musicals. I don't like singing in musicals. It's not just him standing on stage going, I'm a star. You know.
It's an evening with.
It's an evening with.
Yeah.
Quite often the songs that he puts in are songs from shows that he's telling an anecdote, or he explains why they have meaning to him.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's probably one of the best, other than the show I saw on the Wednesday, which was Clannad, it's probably one of the best shows I've seen for some time. Mm. It's one of the best one-man, one-person shows I've seen for a long time. And I'll forever have visions of someone swimming across the Atlantic up an aisle, which will mean nothing until you go and see it. Oh, and we had a heckler.
Oh, yes, tell us.
Yes, there is a part in it where he is giving a monologue about ADHD.
Which he suffers from.
Now, it's a layman's term example of what ADHD is, i.e. you get up to get some coffee, you notice that there's a chip in the mug and you have a pen for that mug that's the same colour. So you go into the laundry room to get the pen to do, and while you're in the laundry room, and you basically don't, you know, you distract yourself. Well, he's partway through this and out of the audience you get some Karen screaming, you can't make fun of people with ADHD. They're not here for your entertainment. You can't make jokes about it. And we're all sitting there thinking, one, he is not telling jokes. At no point did he go, oh, I say. These were monologues. Yeah. They were true events. And he handled it very, very well, just explaining how it affects people. She came back. And in the end, he says, look, appreciate, but you got option. There's the door, use it, or shut up. He never lost his temper or anything, but he was quite forceful, and I thought he did handle it very well. More than the audience were going, you're spoiling it for everyone.
So someone was offended.
Now, we're not quite sure if they were offended because they suffer, or we think they were someone that was offended on the behalf of.
Yes, likely. Yeah. Usually the case.
The same people who was offended about his antics during Who.
Yes. Even though some of the actresses were going, get your willy out and fight her, chase her with your willy. We'll name no names, my Miles. But yeah, no, it was a very good show. And both me and Fake Keith thoroughly enjoyed it.
I know when you got back, I didn't go because I am ill. But when you got back, the stories you were telling and the reciting.
Yes, it was very, very good. So highly recommended.
Right.
Now, dear listeners, we've been listening to those Audiomongers' Big Finish again.
For the love of stories.
Oh, that was it.
What have we been listening to?
We have been listening to The Axis of Insanity.
Or more accurately, I've been listening to just under 3/4 of it.
Okay. Give me the first 3/4.
Yeah, because I was listening to it in the car and it went on to the wrong episode at the end, so I don't listen to the end.
It is number 56 of the Big Finish.
A very early one. Huh?
Big Finish monthly range.
Yeah.
Okay, how much of this did they listen to when they wrote the giggle?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, there is definitely the connotations. I've got to admit, without going into the plot, which we will do later, it very much strikes me in the same vein as comic strip, Time for Time.
Yes, I thought that very much.
It's very comic strippy. That's not doing it a disservice.
No, it's like Voyager and stuff like that. That era of the Doctor Who magazine or Doctor Who monthly comic strip.
The fact that they can do things that you can't afford on the BBC budget.
Mm. Yes, and it's written by a comic book writer primarily.
Yes.
Mm. Simon Furman, famous mostly for Transformers.
Yep.
Created Death's Head.
Yep, one of your favourites.
Yeah, indeed. And it's his only one.
Yeah, which I am surprised because, as I said, it is comic strippy, but it's a damn good story.
It's a good one,
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot.
For anyone that's listening, this is a Fifth Doctor story.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
This is when Big Finish were homaging, reflecting how the episodes went out.
Yes.
So it's four parts done as 25 minutes each. So it's not one of these ones roughly.
I think one of them was about 21 and something minutes.
Like the TV episodes.
Yeah, TV can often be 20 odd minutes. Or 21, 22.
So it's not like now where you've got a 90-minute story or what have you, which they even do for the older Doctors. So this is very much an audio version of how the TV stories were done.
Yep, and it features, say, Fifth Doctor, Davison, and Perry, Nicola Bryant, and Eremem.
Yes, she's a new one on me.
Yeah, she is a Big Finish companion.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
is she Egyptian or ancient Egyptian?
She was an ancient Egyptian pharaoh.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah, because she was mentioned in hieroglyphs and pictograms and such.
Yeah, like any civilized, sensible person writes.
There were elements of this that, having had the giggle, initially there was elements
Jokerish.
Of it. That were actually reminded more of a bit the Toy Maker and that kind of stuff. Mm,
yeah. I think originally it was intended to be either a Toy Maker or Land of Fiction.
Yeah.
It was that sort of thing originally.
Yeah.
It's definitely got that kind of feel to it, and with the Joker type character who is the main protagonist.
The jester. Yeah. Yes.
And I like the fact that the gist of he, she, it, they, them,
yeah.
it moves about through the characters and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it has taken on, because it's broken into the Axis, where all dead-end timelines go.
Yeah, it's all fractured timelines. Yeah. Yes.
Feels a bit TVA-like, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
So there's this central place where the Overseer will tend to these dead timelines, effectively.
Yeah.
Timelines, and they're stuck in time loops and what have you.
Yeah, they're constantly repeating. And
the inhabitants don't know
Until they start breaking out, they don't realise they are time looped. Until the Axis itself, because of the Jester's meddling, starts breaking down.
Well, the scientist, Jara 2,
which we find out is an aspect of the Jester.
Yeah. She, or they, were aware that they were replaying events over and over.
Something was going on. Now, whether this is because of their research that they were doing, or they were doing the research because they were aware of it, is a moot point. It's a chicken.
I'm not sure it stands up.
Yeah, it's a chicken and the egg. I'm not sure if she was aware of repeating and time looping, so she did the investigating, or the project that she was investigating caused her to be aware of the time loop.
Now, this I found very confusing because I thought it was the gist of veering between his character and this female character.
Yeah, this is it. Because Jara 2, the female character, has broken out into the Access and done more investigating on that, she has absorbed, taken on properties that allows her to shift between herself, the Jester, the Doctor at one point. Which I do love the almost evil Peter Davison.
He did a really good job, didn't he?
It
was definitely Mr. Davison, but he had inflections on different words, slightly sarcastic tone.
You can really tell it was a dark version of the Doctor.
Yeah.
Very well done.
Oh, yeah.
So when he did his one with
the Agatha Christie.
No, the snake. The Mara one.
Yeah.
That one's really good. It was an interesting story, and it fits very well with the Joker thing, because another one of insanity.
It's certainly the Jester is more of a Joker character than Arthur Fleck was. But
yes.
We won't go into that.
But there is part of the dialogues as well that kind of like...
All the rhyming and
all. Some of the expression, and there's one expression, the current giggle, he says it in a sarcastic way, and it's kind of like, and really, or something like that. I can't remember what
That's all right then.
That's it. And there's one point where this jester says, that's all right. Yeah. And it's said in almost the same way.
Didn't pick that up.
And there are bits in there that I sit there thinking, is this originally kind of like Toymaker story that they didn't have the rights for or something?
I think it was originally going to be that sort of thing, but they changed their mind.
I definitely got that feeling of it being
a rights issue. It may well have been back then.
That's the impression I got as well, because I got the impression that the Jester could manifest situations and locations.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, like the insane carnival.
Yeah.
The Axis is this sort of null space where anything goes, like the Land of Fiction or the Celestial Toymaker's realm. You can imagine things and they come true.
Mm. Yes. Mm. I got the impression that the Jester, because of the death, elimination or whatever of the Overseer, the Jester had taken over.
Well, and that's what he said. Yes.
Yeah, and now the entire Axis is running to dancing to his tune.
Mm. Yeah, as you said, the lunatics have taken over the asylum.
If at the end of this, I haven't heard the last episode, as I say, but if the last episode... it said, I think I'm going to have fun with all my toys, I would be sitting there going, so this is where the toy maker came from. Yeah. Because it's that kind of close to it to some extent.
Uh-huh. Yeah, certainly inspired by.
This Jester is much madder than the toy maker that we saw in the TV series originally back in the
60s. But he does match more with the
He's getting
giggle.
Closer to the giggle version. Yeah, vibe. Even more insane than Patrick Harris's toy maker.
I also got the sense that the Overseer is a different species than the Time Lords.
Yes.
Time Lords are aware of this area and perhaps maintain it or whatever, but it's certainly the Overseer is a different being entirely.
Almost like a guardian.
Yeah.
They work hand in glove with the Time Lords. Yeah.
The Doctor goes off to find a new one at the end. So there are a species of them somewhere.
Yeah.
Yes.
That have multi-dimensional minds that can cope with doing all the weird stuff they have to do to treat these timelines, which are mostly created by Time Lords messing about.
Yeah.
Not just Time Lords, but mostly Time Lords.
Yeah, mostly
And the Doctor
Time
particularly.
Yeah. and he did say that he had some difficulty with them in the past.
Yeah.
And we also had the character Tog as well.
Tog, yes. Tog. He's a refugee from one of the timelines.
Well, did he make it home? Does he end up on board?
Do you really want to find out?
Yeah.
A noble sacrifice.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, no, he doesn't make it. He doesn't make it out the story.
No. And then right at the end, we have the Elephant's Graveyard, the TARDIS Graveyard.
Oh, yes, yeah. Which I think has been mentioned in a couple of the books as well. I'm not sure.
Omega is mentioned in, wasn't it?
Yeah, I am not sure if it's the original one here or mentioned elsewhere, but certainly Omega, Ensigns of War, which was the first War Doctor book. It's mentioned in there as well. So it's something that is an idea that's popped up a couple of times.
The idea being that the Time Lord that they are synced to, when the Time Lord dies, the TARDIS also wins and dies.
Yeah, crippled and eventually fades unless...
A bit like Trenzalore.
Yeah, like Trenzalore. Yeah. With the TARDIS dying on Trenzalore and becoming embiggened
What a cromulent word you used.
Embiggened.
I thought great performances by everybody around, but particularly the jester.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's quite a hard thing to pull off, having to play that manic
energy.
Yeah, the energy of that. And that was Garrick Hagen.
But there was more than just Garrick Hagen voicing.
Biggs from Star Wars.
Oh, right.
Luke Skywalker's pal from Tatooine who goes off to join the rebellion.
I did not know that.
His wife, Lisa Ross, plays Jarrah too.
So the couple of them played the same character, the different aspects.
And apparently they rehearsed together in their spare time before they went into the recording, which is, you don't normally do that.
You just turn up on the day and read the script. And, yeah.
That's partly why they're both so good, because they did put a lot of effort into
picking up where the other one, the same sentence where he translates. Transforms from one to the other.
Yes.
You do have an example of where, what's the Egyptian character's name?
Eremin.
Eremin.
Eremin. Eremin.
Yes, she is berated by the jester because she cannot read sort of between the basement first floor and second floor.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an interesting idea. Yes. This is 2004, I think, wasn't it? So it's just under a year before New Who.
Yeah, well, perhaps they've been told the license has been renewed or whatever. I think the upper echelons of Big Finish would have been under an embargo, but probably
no. They may well not even have known much, if anything.
Yeah.
When they recorded this, but the whole idea of Eremim having to learn to read English is a weird one now.
Yeah.
You'd think the TARDIS would just translate. She can read Egyptian.
Yeah, it's now been established that the TARDIS translate words as well. Yeah. There was a period when it didn't. Mm. It only did spoken word, not written
she's
word.
Got older, and as she's got older, she's got wiser, and she's learnt these new skills.
Must be.
A couple of million years, you evolve.
It is a
short story.
Yes.
Being that it is, even 2 hours.
No.
90 minutes, if that.
Not even that, really. Yeah. Probably
If you cut out the repeats of the theme music at the beginning, then, we used to do.
Yeah, the process,
But it's not a bad story. And it is interesting to some extent to listen to with the giggle now and the original stories as a comparison.
Mm. Yeah.
To see different focuses on the same kind of ideas.
I found some parts of it confusing, but there again, it does fit in with the very nature of the episodes concerned.
Yeah. Mm. I felt I had to concentrate quite hard a lot of the time. Doesn't hold your hand. If you lose your concentration, you don't quite know where you are anymore.
Yeah.
As in where the characters are. And
I must have a perverse brain because I was fine.
To be fair, I was driving at the time.
There's a car coming towards me. Oh, car parked. Which one do I hit?
So are we still in the Axis or are we in that other world?
Yeah.
Paniadnium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever it was called.
Magni.
Yeah, exactly.
Simply because of the time, it's also a very lean story. There's no extraneous fat or padding. Yeah. It does what it says on the tin.
And a relatively small cast.
Yeah.
A couple of people who come in for the small scenes, like the bird trader and the carnival barker.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's just basically got the overseer, who's there briefly.
Briefly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically the jester, Jarrah Tu, and Tog.
Yeah.
The only
extra.
Besides the companions and the doctor.
They do the men heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Which in some ways I quite like, because then it is a not a heavy story to them, but you got the Doctor.
Yeah.
Doctor Heavy, so to speak.
And also it helps that they've, even the barker and the salesman, they've all got distinct voices.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, you're not confused by, well, he sounds a little bit like him, so which one is it? They all have a distinct sound to them.
And I think also what people have to remember is this is all we had.
Yeah.
Mm. At
this point, this was it.
This was it. This was all we thought we were going to have, because people say, oh, yes, but everyone knew Doctor Who was coming back. We had heard that rumour so many times, and there have been so many abortive versions. There were loads of us that went, I'll believe it when I see the closing credits.
Yeah.
Because it was rumoured, and this was before the internet.
Yeah.
If we had Chowker at this point, it was coming up. If not, might have just had Chowker. But anyway. Yeah, another nice bit I thought was the Doctor explaining why Time Lords can't put down roots.
Yes.
Saying they're the guardians of time.
Yeah.
They have to be prepared to give up their lives to save time and space.
Yeah.
Mm.
To any point, correct and solve paradoxes.
They are dispensable.
Yeah, that's
rather nice.
Yeah.
The Doctor particularly, because he does that sort of thing all the time.
Yeah.
But it's nice to hear, because we do see another Time Lord, kind of, who had
trickle
been
drip,
there
trickle drip.
Trying to solve the problem and failing.
to my mind, the only black mark against it is the fact that the Fifth Doctor doesn't have a sonic screwdriver. So we have another gizmo that is rapidly invented, sort of
a Malinsky Univarius.
Yes. which is definite sonic screwdriver standing.
A Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
That's what Tarka called a sonic screwdriver. But without the knife.
I have to admit, even when the original series was on, I never really missed it that much during Davidson's era. And when it came back, it is handy because it's a bit like the psychic paper filled the gap of, instead of having to spend three episodes rescuing whoever from the jail, you know.
Now we don't have three episodes. Around episode three anymore.
So you've got the sonic screwdriver, can open doors and that kind of stuff. I am of the school of, and it became a magic wand, and it's become a magic wand. And I kind of hope a Cyberman stamps on it for at least a season to get back to actually having to think the way out of problems.
We're getting off topic here, but I think the last season with, well, the first season with Gatwa, he reined it right back in.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's getting off topic completely.
Us get off topic?
No!
Okay, then, if that's the case, summing up, last thoughts. Personally, I enjoyed it. I recommend it. It's a good listen.
It is. It really is.
Yeah. So you have to listen to it, you know, sort of hard, you know, so to speak.
if you
let your attention drift, I mean, that's it. You just get lost somewhat.
Listen to it while doing the washing up.
Yes.
No, it's definitely worth a listen to. I enjoyed the three quarters I listened to.
You've enjoyed it so far.
I will be going back to listen to the rest of it. And dear listeners, if there's something you want to recommend us to listen to at Wigfish, let us know.
Of Button Moon.
Yes, let us know what you would like us to listen to review. Send us your comments, suggestions, or plain abuse even, to show
at
staggeringstories.net. For the love of staggering stories. Right, we have a bit of feedback.
Okay, who we got?
I think it's a bit of audio feedback from Catherine, the Dragon Maker.
Hello,
Catherine.
Hello, Staggerers.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Terrence. Hello, Dave Zilla the Mighty. Yeah. Hello, Head of Pertwee. And
God. Quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, Head of Pertwee. Please don't hurt us.
Again?
And various other
Inky
things.
Inky and Dagzilla and
Ashes of Grunhild and Obnaka.
Yep. And Terence.
Various nebulas.
Quick, I don't think he noticed.
good. Dinky McSwiss a lot.
Thanks for the reminder, Catherine.
Thank you.
And hello to the ever-growing collection of various types of tat populating El Presidente's living room.
That's a good word for it.
It has been a very busy few months here at Shade Dragon, and I do apologize for my absence.
That's fine.
The Maryland Renaissance Festival was very much a success, which still shocks me, considering what a struggle it has been to keep the shelves stocked this year.
As
listener Jay found out, we sold out more weekends than not this year, and I believe the last five were sold out before the end of the fourth. It's just going to get worse until people start deciding that nobody goes to the Renfest anymore. It's too crowded. In the meantime, the booth is closed up for the year, and I'm almost done unpacking and setting my studio to rights. Welcome back, Gene. You have been missed.
Oh, thank you.
Hocus Pocus.
Oh, yes.
Nope, haven't seen it. But I have been assaulted many times by twee witchlings chanting amok, amok, amok at me. Might have watched it this past week, but things have been busy.
That's okay.
While you haven't talked much about Agatha all along, it finished up this week, I felt it was very well done.
Definitely. Saw that.
It's the one show I've diligently kept up with, even given how swamped I've been. The characters were fantastic, both new and old, very well acted, and the costuming was absolutely perfect. 10 out of 10, will watch again.
I shall have to
review. Back to feedback. That sidestep pretty much typifies my relationship with Embrace the Darkness. I've listened to it several times, and even tried reviewing it for a social media group some years ago, but it continues to elude me.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
While I did download the story to listen to while working on closing up my booth this past week, I constantly forgot to actually queue it up. Did I mention I've been busy?
Yes.
It's not a bad story. It just won't stay with me.
I have to agree. Yeah.
Another quick shout out to Jay. Have fun in the UK this December and know that I'm very jealous of you. Time to get this feedback sent out. Anon, Catherine the Dragon Maker.
Thank you, Catherine. Yeah, as our last podcast, I agree with Catherine. To me, Embrace was serviceable. Nothing spectacular.
I have to say,
it was enjoyable but passable.
I didn't know about Agatha all along, but Keith has shown me a clip, and I think that's on my watch list.
It is one I've enjoyed, and because this podcast has been slightly heavy and longer than we anticipated, I was going to do a 30-second recommendation. I shall probably bounce that until next time.
Okay. Yeah, it's one I want to catch next time I've got Disney Plus, which will be fairly soon. Star Wars is coming back. I think it's Skeleton Crew, surely.
Yep.
It's a kiddie program, but it looks like it could be quite good fun. So, yeah, I'll probably catch it then.
Yeah.
So, is that it for the feedback?
I believe that is it.
Crumbly, would you like to lead us out?
I will indeed. And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast. But never fear, in the next one, there'll be more of the same. More news and reviews, more I'll say that again. More fun, frivolity, and jollity, news and reviews, more who old and new.
Please, no more.
But in the meantime, until that...
Jay.
For Joker.
For Joker.
And Jubilance.
Jalopy.
Jagrafest.
Jiggling.
Jinx.
Jubblies.
Comes joyfully...
Jumping.
Juicily. Towards us. This is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Goodbye.
Au revoir.
To be or not to be. That is a logical, Captain.
I knew you were going to say that.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, Number 458, featuring Adam J. Purcell, Andy Simpkins, Gene Ridler, and the real Keith Dunn. The views expressed here are those of the speaker and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers or the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this is an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net.
You better have your knickers off by the time I come out there. Now, I saw something about a new Torchwood.
Oh, that's fake.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Funny, it said November 2024. No. I think we would have heard about it before now.
Yeah, they would be filming.
I'm sure Barron would have mentioned it too.
I apologise. Adam, I apologise in advance for sniffs, coughs and various noises that I'm... bound to make.
It will be quite an edit.
I'm sorry.
That was Keith quietly expiring.
Of course, my time is out. We may know the results, but...
Yeah, that's why I was hedging my bet somewhat.
Also, we may not.
Depending on the number of recounts, riots, if America's actually still in one piece.
Yes. Hanging Chads might make a return. Yes. It may have been a while.
Civil War may break out. Mm-hmm. But on the brighter side of life...
On the bright side of life.
So what are we doing first?
Joker?
If you like.
Let's get it out of the way. Axis of Insanity. Keith has to go wee-wees.
Is that the sequel to it?
That's the sequel, yeah.
Yep.
Also has to blow his nose.
Oh.
He may make it out alive, we don't know.
I can smell.
We're just listening to the variety of interesting noises that are coming.
Did you hear the duck?